Hello, this is Steve Smith, WCG Patient Radio. WCG is a company focused on the ethical, efficient, and safe conduct of clinical trials. We're speaking today with Dr. David Feigenbaum, a medical researcher who also has a serious life-threatening disease he has developed a treatment for and who is now actively in the fight against COVID-19 with his research center. Dr. Feigenbaum is the author of Chasing My Cure, A Doctor's Race to Turn Hope into Action. Dr. Feigenbaum is also at University of Pennsylvania, where he leads the Castleman's Disease Collaborative Network and the Castleman's Disease Center. He's Assistant Professor of Medicine, Translational Medicine, and Human Genetics, and Assistant Director of the Patient Impact and Orphan Disease Center at the University of Pennsylvania. He has a degree from Georgetown. He has an MBA from Wharton, and he has an MD medical doctor degree from University of Pennsylvania. For more details of his background and his book and his fight to create a treatment for his own disease, listen to another podcast in this series with Dr. Feigenbaum. The series is WCG Patient Radio on the WCG Institute on the different podcast networks. Hello, Dr. Feigenbaum. How are you?
Steve, thank you so much for having me on. I'm doing well today, all considered.
You are actively engaged with your substantial research talent and your staff and your capabilities there at University of Pennsylvania in the COVID-19 fight. I know you're going to tell us about that, and it would really be great if you could talk to us about the patient perspective in this era of COVID-19 with all the feelings and uncertainty and all the people's fight to get not only COVID-19 addressed, but their other diseases they may have. Can you talk about the patient perspective?
Sure, Steve. So just as you mentioned earlier, I am a physician scientist studying Castleman disease, a rare condition. I'm also a patient battling the same disease. In fact, I was so sick back when I was in medical school that I had my last rites written to me back in 2010. So I really considered that to be the start of this this new time that I didn't think I would have, which I sometimes call overtime. And with this sense of overtime, and unfortunately with then going on to relapse four more times, and so now nearly dying five times, I learned a lot about life and about living from nearly dying. And those lessons that I've kept so close to my heart and have really helped to change the way that I've lived ever since going through early medical challenges, I think many of these lessons are actually particularly relevant today. So I mentioned overtime earlier, the sense I've got this extra time, but it's very precious and you don't know how long it'll last. I think that COVID-19 has actually given many of us this sense of being in overtime. It's frightening when you don't know how much time you have and when this kind of mysterious disease can come back at any time or appear at any time, which is something that I've certainly struggled with over the years, but I've also learned a lot about how to handle and manage that. I think the number one feeling and the number one lesson from being in overtime is to focus on the most important things in life. Knowing that the clock is ticking, at least has helped me to say, well, if the clock is ticking down, what are the most important things that I should be doing, that I should focus my time on? And that, for me, has helped me to deal with the uncertainty and the fear of living in overtime. Another is a concept that I refer to in the book, is turning hope into action. So for years I hoped and I prayed that someone somewhere would find a treatment or a cure that could save my life. And then I realized eventually that if I was hoping for a cure, if I was praying for a cure, that should guide my action. It shouldn't be hope, prayer, or action. It should be hope, pray, and act. And so we can do the same thing here with coronavirus. Unfortunately, we don't have total control over the situation, but we can all take action to prevent ourselves from getting coronavirus, practicing social distancing, hand washing, encouraging others to do the same thing. These are proactive, concrete steps that we can take in our own lives that can help to turn our hope that we won't get this disease or a loved one won't get it into action. Another lesson that I talk about in Chasing My Cure is something that a lot of people don't necessarily think about when you talk about, you know, deadly illnesses, and that's the power of humor. I know that you and I have spoken about this a number of times before, Steve, that in the midst of really tough times, actually laughing and laughing with the people you love can be incredibly powerful. And there have been a number of occasions throughout my battle with Castleman disease, and more recently with COVID-19, where the people that I love and I, we've actually connected around something really funny. We've been able to laugh together and find something positive in the midst of really tough times. And the fourth lesson I wanted to highlight is this concept of creating silver linings. So during tough times, we're often encouraged to find the silver lining, look amongst what's going on in your world and say, oh, I think this is a positive that's come from a really tough time. And I think we should all look for silver linings, but I really encourage listeners to create silver linings. And by that, what I mean is to think, what can I do today to make something positive out of this difficult experience? How can I create a silver lining? Is it a memory I can create with someone that I love? Is it an action step I can take to make something positive out of something that is clearly not positive?
Yes, this is really good insight from somebody who knows and is on the front lines. With all of that you do in your scientific research, you are also not only living with the Castleman's disease, the one that you found a treatment for, you are experiencing the COVID situation as a person who has a compromised immune system, because you've explained before that the drug that you discovered can help you with your Castleman's disease does compromise your immune system. Isn't that right?
That's exactly right. So Castleman disease is a disease where the immune system gets out of control and then begins to attack your vital organs, like your heart, your lungs, your liver, and your kidneys. And actually, we call it a cytokine storm. And unfortunately, that is also what occurs in the late stages of COVID-19. So the patients who are dying in the ICU with COVID-19 are dying from a cytokine storm where their immune system is out of control. And as a result, the immune system turned on to fight the virus, but then it itself got out of control and caused even more damage than the virus itself. And so you're exactly right that the way to treat this disease, Castleman disease that I have, is to weaken and dampen down the immune system, which means that I have a weakened immune system to potentially fight off COVID-19. But it is interesting to think, actually, drugs developed for Castleman disease, a drug called tocilizumab in particular and ciltuximab, these drugs were developed for Castleman disease. One of them was developed 30 years ago in Japan for Castleman disease. These drugs are being tried right now all around the world to treat this end stage of COVID-19, this cytokine storm that I was telling you about. And so it's so interesting when you think about how a drug could both potentially put you at increased risk for getting very sick from a disease, but also another drug in the exact same class or that treats the exact same disease could actually potentially be a treatment for that exact same illness.
Yeah, so you are telling us about something that so many patients are going through, where they have a disease, they really want to keep participating in their treatment, but for various reasons, they don't want to expose themselves to COVID-19, whether it's their immune system or something else, to go be in there, continue their clinical trial, or go just regularly to the doctor. They have to worry about encountering other patients in a COVID-19 environment. Yet in spite of this, you work out of your home and you do other things to keep the collaboration going, which is so pivotal to your work. Talk to us about your COVID-19 research and the work you've taken on in your research institute.
Sure, Steve. So just a few weeks ago, I, like everyone else, I still am terrified about this virus, but I was really, I felt very hopeless. And I remember I was thinking to myself, you know, I wish that I could do something that could help against this virus. I wish there was something that my lab could do. And as I learn more and more about this virus and this illness, COVID-19, I learned about the way the immune system becomes hyperactive, just like in Castleman disease. I learned about drugs being used that were not developed for COVID, that are developed for other conditions, that are being tried in COVID. And I remember thinking to myself, I really hope that someone tracks all of these drugs that are being used in one central place and starts getting a sense for what's working and what's not working, similar to what we did for Castleman disease. And a couple minutes later, I thought to myself, wait a minute, if I'm hoping that someone somewhere is going to do this, and our lab and our team has been doing this for years for Castleman disease, maybe I should actually listen to my advice and I should turn my hope into action. And so a few weeks ago, we decided that we would pivot our focus. We'll continue to focus on Castleman disease, but in parallel, we've begun two large projects, one of which was to actually go through every single published paper that's been written about COVID-19 in the last 3 months, which is actually over 2,500 papers have been written in the last 3 months. And to go through every single one of those 2,500 papers, we pulled out data on over 3,000 patients that are reported across those papers and dozens of drugs that were used in each of those patients. We put it into a free and central database online, so anyone in the world can go online and look at every drug that has ever been used against COVID-19 and that's been reported in the medical literature. And in there, they can see what's been used, how well it's worked. The idea being that right now, we have doctors around the world that are fighting COVID-19, and if they want to know what drugs have been tried, they would have to read through 2,500 papers, which of course no individual doctor, you know, has the time, especially if they're in the middle of treating a patient. So we assembled a 30-member volunteer army that was able to go through the 2,500 papers and extract out all the key data so that that doctor treating that patient, wherever they may be, can go to the database, go online and see what's been tried, and that could potentially inform the decisions that they make about how to treat their patient. We're in the process of analyzing this effort, the data from this effort, and hope to have a report together within a week. And it's really been record time to go from 2,500 papers, 30 volunteers, to now data on thousands of patients all in one spreadsheet, just in the matter of, it's been a little bit less than 2 weeks. And I think this highlights, first off, it was not me or just a couple members from my team working on our own. There were a number of people who said, David, I want to be a part of this. And it's really been amazing what I like to call citizen scientists who have come to me in my lab and said, I want to help. How can I help? And we've been able to create this team and extract a lot of data. And I'm really hopeful that when we complete the analyses, that there'll be some really important pearls of wisdom that can help with treating COVID-19 patients all around the world. In parallel, we also are building what we call the COVID-19 immune map. In the same way that we've mapped out the immune response that occurs in Castleman disease, we have a fourth-year immunology PhD student in my lab who's currently mapping out how all of the different experiments that have been performed around the world potentially fit together into one central COVID-19 immune response. We felt like these were two things that we've done before for Castleman disease and that we should, you know, take up the call to arms and get involved ourselves.
That's really amazing, and it fulfills a lot of people's desire to take an action, something that you were a proponent of, and that's wonderful to hear. Is this something that, is there a URL for it or a way to contact when researchers want to have access to that?
Absolutely. So if you go to cdcn.org/repurpose, then you'll actually be able to find this entire database. So it's cdcn.org/repurpose. And the reason we use the term repurpose is because we're repurposing, or we're studying the repurposing of drugs that were developed for one condition in another condition in COVID-19.
So talk a little bit about drug repurposing. That's a thing that many in the patient advocacy community as well as the research community would like to see more of. What is repurposing and why do we want to see more of it?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So drug repurposing is taking a drug that was initially developed for one condition and using it in another condition. And a lot of times we like to think of drugs as being a malaria drug or a chemotherapy. We think about the drug in terms of what it was initially developed for. However, as you know so well, Steve, these drugs oftentimes have many mechanisms of action. And even if they only have one mechanism of action, that particular cell type or gene or protein might actually be important in many different diseases. So as a result, these drugs that may have been developed for Castleman disease or malaria or whatever the condition may have initially been, these drugs often can help in other conditions. We mentioned earlier that my life is currently being saved by a drug that I identified. This drug called sirolimus was developed almost 30 years ago for patients undergoing kidney transplantation, and it had never been used before for Castleman disease, but based on research that we did in my lab, we identified that it looked like this drug might be able to work against Castleman disease, and in my case in particular, and so I began taking it in what's called off-label use, and so that's where it's being prescribed for a disease other than what it was initially intended for. And what I'm really excited about, well, first off, it's been over 6 years that I've been in remission, and I'm so thankful for this long remission. But what I'm really excited about is to think there are currently about 1,500 drugs that are approved for about 2,500 diseases, but there are 7,000 diseases that don't have a single drug that's FDA approved. And so I'm really passionate about us looking into ways that we can look at the 1,500 drugs already approved and understand, are there other diseases out there that these drugs might be useful in? And so right now for COVID-19, there is a huge effort by us in our Castleman's program to capture data on all of the times that a drug is being used to treat COVID-19. And by definition, it's off-label because nothing is approved for COVID-19. But in parallel to our work to say, okay, what are these doctors giving patients that might or might not be working? There's also an extensive amount of work being done all over the world to test many, many, many drugs in laboratory experiments to say, you know, maybe we should try this drug or that drug against COVID-19. And so it's really a two-tier approach. It's doing research in the lab to figure out what might work. And then it's when those drugs are actually given to patients, tracking whether they actually do work. So that way we can continue to inform our clinicians and make sure that they're giving the right drugs to the right patients.
Yes. So there are so many drugs you're pointing out that could potentially be repurposed and so many diseases that need the treatment, yet we still have some way to go before there will be a full court press to repurpose drugs, even though the potential is sitting right there, as you've proven with and shown with Castleman's disease. And it seems to take sometimes a crisis to make a real change, which COVID-19 certainly is. So it's great. Here you are reapplying that concept and trying to help in this crisis.
Yeah, thank you so much, Steve. I mean, you and I have spoken extensively about how important it is that we do this. We've advocated for bills before together, but I agree with you. I think that the general public seeing that these drugs already approved are already helping some patients with COVID-19, I think this is going to highlight the potential that we really need to address for many, many more diseases. And I hope that there'll be a lot more diseases that will benefit from drug repurposing in the future based on the attention that's on it right now.
Yes, and you're talking about something like a lot of the things that you've done for rare disease and now COVID-19, which is not rare. A lot of the issues that are going to be tackled and that you work on have applicability to other diseases. So I like to think of rare diseases as going to the moon, where we discovered things doing that we use here on Earth. And we have same potential, you know, thanks to you and the folks that work so hard on these things. And I think a lot of people who have diseases of all kinds may not always appreciate that now that we have this crisis, some things are going to be done that will, in the long run, help those diseases as well.
Oh, absolutely. You and I were speaking earlier just about how, you know, this is a time where it's full court press, all hands on deck. We all need to do everything we can against COVID-19. I mean, it's amazing the rapid turnaround time the WCG IRBs are doing right now to turn around these COVID-19 projects. It's amazing what these volunteers have been able to do in helping go through all these papers. But just as you said, what will be really, really amazing is if all of the hard work that we're channeling towards COVID-19 right now could also have a major, major impact for all of these other diseases out there. You and I share this passion, in particular for rare disease, and I think we're both brokenhearted that there are 7,000 rare diseases and 95% of them don't have a single approved drug. And so if this crisis can potentially help, you know, to move forward many aspects of medicine for other diseases, then that would be a really wonderful silver lining. It still would be an awful, awful, awful pandemic that our world has had to go through. But I really do hope that some positive could come from this.
Yes, and one of the things that's changing is the movement towards giving people their treatments at home, having them do doctor's office visits, but while the patient is actually still at home, perhaps over video or whatever, and other kinds of remote connectivity. This is another game changer that patients have long wanted and now is beginning to increase because of the need for people to stay at home. You yourself
totally
are at home,
agree.
Aren't you? You have, you and Caitlin, your wife Caitlin, you have a cute little 18-month-old Amelia, and you
right.
three are at home right now, aren't you?
That's exactly right, and I've actually, this week and last week, my daughter has begun saying a lot more words, and so even though I'm in my office doing work, I like every once in a while get to hear a new word that I hadn't heard her say before. So that's another example. You know, this is another silver lining that I think is coming from this, where you know, I'm getting to hear and see a lot of really special things that I wouldn't normally hear and see during the workday. But speaking of at home and at home infusions, so I get a monthly at home infusion, and I just got mine this past week, and I have to say, you know, as a patient, I was so thrilled that I did not need to go into an infusion clinic at Penn where, you know, I would have been exposed to a lot of other patients. But even at-home infusion in the middle of this COVID-19 crisis is actually still a bit scary for both the person doing the infusion and also for the patient. And so I think that we need to continue to, I love, as you said, you know, the videoing opportunity, because even though it's just one person you're interacting with, you know, there's still fear that comes with bringing a new person into your house. And we need to appreciate that and recognize that that patients like me are still going to be scared when anyone comes into our house. And keep thinking about innovative ways to make this better. I know that's something that WCG will continue to do.
Yes, I think that's where what we're all in together to try to accomplish. So I think we are out of time today, David. Thank you so much for talking with us. We're looking forward to hearing good things from your research.
Thank you so much for having me, Steve. It's always so wonderful to chat, and the idea that my journey and what I've gone through in the past could be helpful for people dealing with the stress of COVID-19 really makes me really pleased. And then the idea that we can have a tangible impact on the COVID-19 fight through my research, you know, even if it's a small way, we're really thankful for the opportunity and thankful to be able to spread the word on this podcast with you today.
That's our pleasure. We have been speaking today with Dr. David Fagenbaum. Thanks for listening, everybody. This is WCG Patient Radio. Listen to our full series on WCG Patient Radio. Thanks very much to our executive producer, Lauren Osmore, who's also at home, and our technical director, David Fogel, who's also at home. Thanks for listening, everybody.